Oh, it's official now. The on-air sign's on. Thank you. So everybody should have gotten a piece of paper. A couple of you asked what it's for, and I told you that that's our lesson material for today. And that's really not too far off. If you please, in your Bibles, turn to Matthew chapter 24. We began a discussion there two classes ago. And the basis of Matthew 24 is found in verse 3. When the disciples come to Christ, as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, they came to him privately and said, "Tell us, when will these things be?" That in reference to knocking the stones of the temple down. What will be the sign of your coming? And what will be the sign of the end of the age? That's the basis of what we're getting ready to look at beginning in verse 15 today. The question becomes, is that three questions or is it one? And I'll just say it pretty much straightforward. There are differences of opinions on this. We are not in this discussion to convince anybody of one way or the other. That's not what we're here for. Please don't try to do that. That's not the point. All that does is it raises angst and causes this. But we do want to hear what your thoughts are. If you have a thought, please bring it up. But if the next person who brings up their thoughts differs, don't argue. We're not trying to convince anybody. We're going to read what the scriptures say, and we are going to make application. Here's where the difficulty comes in. The application that we make is going to be based upon our understanding of verse 3. If we understand it to be all one question, then what we're going to see verses 15 and on, we read that to answer the one question. If we see three different questions, then what we see in verses 15 and on, we are going to see is answering the three different questions. Both are right. James and I were talking before class that the job of an elder is to make sure that erroneous teaching does not infiltrate the church, the local congregation here, and the church at large. It doesn't matter which direction you want to hold your opinion on Matthew 24. It's not erroneous teaching. Both fit. And for all I know, both have application, or the answers that we see apply in both areas. Okay. It could very much be like all of the prophecies that we read about in the Old Testament. That's fine too. Okay. But I just wanted to make sure we brought that up. We're not here to try to convince somebody that I'm right. That's not what we're here for. We're here to look at the scriptures, see what they say, and to see how they apply. The blank paper that I handed out. However you want to do it, but on that blank paper, put on one side of it one question. The destruction of Jerusalem. On the other side of it, put three questions. Destruction of Jerusalem, sign of the coming of the Lord, and the sign of the end of the ages. You don't have to write those out. Just put three questions. So now you have your pro and con sheet. I believe Sabrina needs one of the blank pages. Charles has them for you, Sabrina. Okay, so split the paper. One side's one question. The other side is three questions. And now as we begin to go through from verse 15 on, decide in your mind, does this lend itself to the one question Does it lend itself to the three questions? And maybe you need a third column that says both. I don't know. Okay? Because it can very well lead itself to both, which in all likelihood it does. Otherwise, there wouldn't be such a split of opinion on it, right? Okay. So that's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to be looking in verse 15, moving on. We do want to open our class with a prayer. And we have a visitor with us today, and we're going to ask Brother Mike Stepke to lead us in that prayer.
Father in heaven, we're grateful this morning that we are able to be together. More importantly, that we're able to open your word, speak, talk to one another about it, to see the truths as revealed in it, and what they do for us in our life, and how we live by those rules and those things. Glory to your name, and in fact, remember Christ's death. Help us as we continue in our lives as Christians that we'll never forget to thank you for the blessings you've given us in life. Never forget to thank you for all of the things that continue to occur in life that keep us in life in this situation, even to the things, the measurements, and the things of the earth and sky and the stars around us. Things that we probably take for granted at times. Father, we have folks right next to us, near us, in our own families that need to hear your word. And we ask that you give us opportunities or help us to see opportunities to use them and talk about your son and the life that he lived and then the life of obedience that we need to live before you. Help us in all those things. Help us to be mindful of our brethren, helpful where we can.
Amen. Thank you. And just on a personal note, it is great, Mike, to see you feeling so much better. We are all happy and pleased that you're back. And as at least one has said that I heard this morning, prayers have been answered. God moves in very mysterious ways. So we're glad you're here. One other point I'll make real quick is the destruction of Jerusalem, that event, is that important in what we see in the scriptures? And the answer is absolutely yes. The destruction of Jerusalem ended about a 40-year time frame of a chicken running around with its head cut off. The law of Moses had been nailed to the cross. The elements of his law, the sacrifices and all of that, had been done away with. They had been fulfilled. Their purpose had ceased at the cross, at the beginning of the church in Acts 2. I think of that as one event. But the Jews didn't get it. And until the destruction of Jerusalem, when the temple was torn down, the Jews were still thinking, this is the way to go. So that would have been the finality, the culmination, in hopefully in their minds, that said, okay, we're done. There's nowhere else to go to worship. Though James was saying today that Caesarea, you thought?
Yeah, one of the cities up there still performed sacrifices.
Yes, the Jewish still performed their traditional religion, which I find fascinating. But so, it's important. Or the If we look at the other side, the three questions, one is the destruction of Jerusalem, the other is the sign of his coming, and the other is the end of the world. Are those three things of importance? Yes, they are. Vastly important. So now, let's look at beginning in verse 15. And I'm going to read it, so bear with me here. It's a little bit lengthy. We're going to read down until verse 22. Matthew 24. We're still in that. We're on. It's lesson 21, and we'll actually come back and start looking at some of Gene Taylor's questions. Therefore, verse 15 beginning, therefore, because of what I've just said, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place. Stop. What is that? Yeah, but it's the answers expanded a lot from just the Roman army. People will look at that and they say, that's when you're standing on the walls of Jerusalem and you see the Roman army out in front of you. That's not what this is talking about. That's the beginning of what this is talking about. What is the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place? Back.
It's not from Bethlehem in Daniel,
is it? Well, yeah, that's what he says. Okay.
But is that the same as this one?
Well, remember what we just said? Prophecies can have duality of meanings or more. The prophecy from Daniel, yeah, there's been, and I've got to go to my historian on this, two or three abominations of desolation. Two. The first one, I think, is probably what Daniel was talking about. This prophecy is talking about one that's coming. Go ahead, James.
So the first one was Antiochus Epiphanes, when he was angry at the Jews, and he demanded that a pig be slaughtered on the altar of the temple.
So there's one.
That was the first one. The second one was when Titus went into the temple during the destruction of Jerusalem, they abominated by doing the same thing on the temple altar at that time.
And going into the most holy place. Okay? This would be the second one.
Okay, so this is the current abomination.
Yeah, this is the one that's coming during the destruction of Jerusalem. But Daniel also used this terminology to describe a similar event with Antiochus Epiphanes. Go ahead, Nona. Yeah, in context, this specific, and you're right, they did a multitude of abominations. But in the context of this specific context, one standing in the holy place and the abomination of desolation references Titus, the commander, going in and offering an unclean animal upon the altar and entering into the most holy place. That's this context. Even though the army committed multiple atrocities. Oh, yeah.
But this is an important point because the Babylonians had already destroyed the temple before Daniel's day.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not abominate the temple, even though they took all the gold, all the silver, destroyed, knocked out the stones. But there was no abomination because there was no spiritual abomination that had occurred. In fact, this is the first one. And as you mentioned, it's that
yeah, that's the key. So in the context, as we understand this, we need to understand that this is talking about offering something on the altar to God that wasn't permitted. Michael?
Okay.
Ethylene.
Okay, I had written Luke 21:20 next to this, and I was wondering...
What's it say?
But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation has come near.
Uh-huh.
So
that's the same idea.
Okay.
When the army surrounded Jerusalem, then you're going to know that the desolation has come near. Hadn't necessarily occurred yet. It didn't occur until the siege was over and they tore everything down. That's when Titus came in and offered an unclean animal on the altar. Go ahead.
And to put it in context, during the siege, there was actually a period of time where they stopped the siege, and the Jews were allowed to repent, turn their ways from fighting against the Romans, and they chose not to.
Right.
So even though that siege was occurring, there was a law in the siege to allow them to do that, and they chose not to.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah,
You know, I can't speak to that. I don't know. Do you know?
That's the story.
Yeah, I
think
too.
But when we say, just like in Titus, that he didn't actually himself stand in the altar and do that work, it was because it is, you know, when Titus was there, Titus wasn't the one standing.
Right.
He was in his, wherever he was.
His army.
But he knew that it was going on and it happened under his watch.
Yeah.
So that's the idea.
Okay. So verse 15, got a question. Which side of the paper are you going to put it on? Okay, Jill says both. Because it does answer the question, if we understand in the three questions, when the disciple said, when is this going to take place? That's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. So anything that speaks to specifically the destruction of Jerusalem does fit on both sides of the page, doesn't it? Because it speaks to both. Okay? So, Christ cites the prophecy from Daniel. And when Daniel prophesied about the desolation, the abomination of desolation. And the New American Standard, and I don't know if the other versions do this, I forgot to look it up. After he says, which is spoken of through the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, this is now in black, so we know Christ didn't say it, let the reader understand. Do the other versions have that? Okay. So the idea being what? We're telling you something that's important here. And you need to understand it in the context of what's being said. Okay? So don't take this and try to make it apply in 1,000 different ways. It doesn't. There's an application for this. Okay? Reading on. Then let those, when this is happening, let those that are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to get the things out that are in his house. Let him who's in the field not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are with child and to those who nurse babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. For then there will be a great tribulation, such has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. And unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days shall be cut short. Put verse 22 on the table for a moment and cover it with a blanket. Let's come back up, look at verses 16 through 21. What is the instruction that is being given? Get out of town and be quick about it. Don't even bother. You know, it's when the fire department bangs on your door and says you've got 10 minutes because the fire's coming over that hill. You don't stop and start packing, Sabrina. Yeah, first time I went up into the backcountry with my dad, I was about 10, maybe 11 years old. Dad told me, as we're getting ready to take off down the trail, he says, if I tell you to stop, if I tell you to turn and run, you don't look at me and say, what? Why? He said, you just do it. Well, that's it. That's it. A hard head makes a soft, I'll change it, heel. And that's the point. Because for all I know, there's a rattlesnake this far from me, getting ready to strike. And if I do what we all do today, somebody says, duck, and what do? Huh? When you're on a golf course, somebody hollers four, you don't look up to find the ball. because you're liable to take it in the eye. Okay? You cover up. That's what Christ is saying. He said, when you look out there and you see this, get out of town. Don't stop to pack. And for pray right now that you're in a condition that you can run. If you're 8.5 months pregnant, you may have a little bit of a difficulty. If there's snow on the ground or it's cold, you may have difficulty. Pray that the conditions are such that you can do it. Yes.
I was just thinking now, it says let those in who are in Judea. I was thinking mainly Jerusalem, but this says Judea, so does that mean all of Judea or just Jerusalem?
No, I believe it to be all of Judea, specifically speaking of Jerusalem because of the siege that was coming. But keep in mind that when the Roman army came in to subdue Jerusalem, they were subduing Judea because Judea was the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom was gone, long gone by this point in time. But the southern kingdom was still viable, even though it had been under Roman rule and had been for a while. But they revolted. They're fighting against that Roman rule. As James pointed out, the idea was that there was a lull to give them a chance to come back into the fold. They chose not to. So the Romans conquered Judea. But in the specific, it'd be like if we say the United States has fallen, or rather Washington, D.C. has fallen, we understand that to mean the United States is done. Because that's the capital, that's the main city. Okay. All right. That's verses 16 through 21. And he says, hope that it's not in the wintertime. Because it's cold, it's nasty, there might be snow on the ground. And really hope and pray it's not on the Sabbath. Because you're only going to be able to go about, what's a Sabbath distance, 12 miles, something like that? It's not even that far, is it? It was the walking distance from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. Go ahead, Charles.
Would that rule hold true if they were under
siege? You're reading what I'm reading. What do you think? Yeah, evidently it does. That would be the implication, doesn't it? Go ahead, Joe.
Well, and I agree that that would be the implication. And I think it's a little bit ironic because at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, the church was already established and they weren't under the law of the Sabbath anymore anyway. But some people would have stopped.
Well, yeah. That's kind of why I call it a chicken running around without its head. For 40 years, from the time of the crucifixion of Christ and the day of Pentecost following, from that moment on, the law of Moses was done. It had been nailed to the cross.
In some people's mind.
Well, no, in the mind of God, it was done. That's like that chicken, no head. It still thinks it's alive.
Yeah,
the blood is spurting, not to be too graphic, but it's still running around trying to be a chicken. Okay? So, but yeah. James?
So if you think about this whole process, it wasn't like they just showed up at the doorstep of Jerusalem and nobody had any idea this big, massive army was coming. As you said, they were going through Judea and they were taking care of the pockets of resistance that were going. Everybody knew this. The hunters were coming back into town, letting them know, hey, they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. We do know from history that those who left, particularly the Christians that were in Jerusalem, went to Perea, which is on the other side of the mountains to the east. They went over to the old Edom area. And so that's where they went to find sanctuary because that was not part of the Roman rule at the time. But they did have an opportunity to leave. For whatever reason, the Romans stopped for a couple of years and people weren't allowed to leave during that time. And then they started up again, which is ultimately what caused the overall destruction.
Okay. So when we read this, sometimes we get a little bit too literal. And we think that, oh, I'm standing on the, the rooftop and I look and there's this massive army. Now I got to run. And James just made the point. No, they knew the Romans were coming and it took them a while to get there. Years. So when you first began to hear about this happening, what should you do? Leave. If we hear that old movie title, the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming, and they hit the East Coast, I may be looking for a plane flight out of here to go somewhere else because they're coming. Well, it's going to take them a while to get here. So that's the idea of when you see this abomination or when you see this army approaching, Luke 21, get out of town. No. I think you're absolutely right.
Well, that's a good point, because they still thought that they had it in God's favor. And so God would protect them.
Okay. So that's verses 16 through 21. Get out of town. Go ahead, James.
Just from my opinion, I think 21 actually goes to 22. I don't think it fits with the other text. I think it's actually talking about 22.
You know, you're probably right. But I can see in 21 the connection with verses 16 down through. I don't have a clue what 22 is talking about. How did God shorten the days literally? Or is it just a figure of speech to say that once the army gets here, there's not going to be as much opportunity? I don't know. What do you all think? Go ahead.
I think the idea here is the amount of time that this destruction, this tribulation is going to take place. So from the perspective of looking at some of the other texts like Revelation, what I see here, this great tribulation is the tribulation of the church. It's this overwhelming sense of being dominated by the persecutions occurring by the Romans more than the Jews at this point in time. And so we know that that period of time
Okay. As we look at different thoughts and viewpoints, every viewpoint is going to have a pro and a con, a positive and a negative to it. I've given that a lot of thought in terms, because to me, verse 21 fits the persecution of the church. The negative part for me is it doesn't fit the rest of the passage. The rest of the passage is without question talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. So when he gets to verse 21, does he just all of a sudden flip the switch and talk about the persecution of the church, the Great Tribulation? Or is that Great Tribulation referencing all that went on during the siege of Jerusalem? Again, one of those things, maybe you put it on both sides of your paper, verse 21 and 22. I can't answer that. I do tend to lean towards the idea that verse 22 is not literal in its understanding, but rather is a form of figurative speech to say that it's not going to last forever, which the Roman persecution did not, neither did the siege of Rome. Go ahead. Of Jerusalem. You're reading it.
Oh, this is what
Zechariah would be that text. That
yeah. Daniel, Zechariah all have reference and prophecy towards these events. So that is the book, the Jewish book. They don't have anything other, and I say that with a big grain of salt. The Torah is 400 and how many? 613 laws. And they have, somebody has gone through the Old Testament and picked these laws out. And so that's their litany, their list of what they do. It's kind of like their commentary on God's word, Genesis through Malachi. But the Old Testament, we have what they had. They've kind of gone off in the wrong direction. That's why I say it's a huge grain of salt, probably bigger than this building. But the elect is not, in the Old Testament, the elect always speaks to the children of God, if that terminology is used, the Jew. The elect, as far as the Christian is concerned, that terminology is not used. When it talks about the future coming of the church and or New Testament Christians, it talks about them as being the remnant, that which God saves from what he had to begin with. Okay? Did that answer your question? Okay. And I think I got that right. Close enough. Okay. So you can take 21 and 22 together, or you can take 21 as being part of 16, which to me has a little bit better flow than to all of a sudden say, no, it's talking about the church. But again, it could be both. I do think 22 is figurative in its nature, that it's not literal. Though, did God ever shorten any days? Yes. Did he ever lengthen them? Yes. Hold my arms up. Because as long as my arms are held up, the sun stands still. And we're going to win the battle. Go ahead, James. We don't know where John was at this point in time, but we do know John was still alive. Not real certain about the rest of them. We do have some historical dates as to when Peter was crucified traditionally upside down. When Paul died, we've got some traditional dates. We have an apostle that we know virtually nothing about other than that he was an apostle. Which one? Matthias. He was chosen in Acts chapter 1 to replace Judas. Where do you read of him ever again? We don't. But he was an apostle, right? And Etheline's right. We don't have an awful lot that is told us about Nathanael or some of the others, except in the Gospels. We do see snippets concerning them. But Matthias wasn't even in the picture during the gospel time, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. He wasn't chosen until Acts. And after that, he just kind of disappears. Was he still in Jerusalem? I don't know. We just don't know. Go ahead. Oh, you had that look. Adjusting the glasses to make sure we look more studious. And oh, good luck. Okay, so that takes us down through 22, verse 23. Christ says, then, if anyone says to you, I have some question in my mind, when is the then? Is this following the destruction of Jerusalem? Is this during the time when you look out and or see or hear the army approaching? Is this following the desolation of abomination? I don't know when the then is. That's a sermon title. When is the then? Aaron, where are you? We need you taking notes. Okay. Our then is the when. Ooh, I like that one better. So what do you think in verse 23? When's the then? Okay, Sheila sent me a question. is verse 21 talking about the days or the calamity destruction being cut short? And Sheila, that was the discussion we were having. I think it's figurative language. I don't necessarily think that it's a specific, the 24-hour day has now become 22 hours. I don't think that's what it's talking about. I think what it's talking about is here comes this time period that there is going to be persecution, destruction, calamity. That time period is going to be finite. It's going to be confined within a certain time frame, a parameter. Begins here, ends here. It's not going to be forever. I think that's the figurative language that we see there. We see that an awful lot in the book of Revelation. Time and time and times again. And all that's talking about, when he says time, it doesn't mean 100 days or 100 years or 1,000 years, which is what people try to force it into being. It just means it's a time frame. And basically, what that's saying is, quit worrying about it. God's in control. God knows when the time is going to, and by the way, we're going to see that here in just a moment, if we get that far. God's in control. Let him be in control. Quit fighting. Quit kicking against the goad. This, whatever the time frame is, God knows it. Let it be. And I think that's what this is talking about. So then in 23, then, if anyone says to you, behold, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe him. Well, the latter part of that verse is pretty simple. There were an awful lot of false Christs. Men who came along and said, I'm Jesus. I'm the Christ. We still see it today. David Koresh, Jim Jones. And I'm going to tell you, in Gil's humble opinion, a lot of the so-called preachers today that have built these massive mega churches have what I call a Christ complex. They may not come right out and say they're Jesus or Christ, but that's how they tend to act. That's just Gil's opinion. Take it as such. When do you think this then is talking about? And maybe it's talking about all of the above. I don't know. What do you think? Charles?
I think because it's not specified that it probably applies to the whole time frame of all of the events.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Anyone else? James, you got a thought on that?
I think it goes back to the time period he's talking about. The tribulation, the things that are going on, you're going to see these things happen, and you're going to see these people stand up. Paul talked about it at least in Timothy, in his letters to Timothy, about false prophets and about being drawn away by these individuals.
So do you think maybe like Charles at the time frame he's speaking of in the specific context is talking about the army coming, the siege, the destruction of Jerusalem, all that, the events that occurred. They began the siege in what, 66 or 67 AD? Okay, so the siege happened for 4 or 5 years. And during that time frame, as was mentioned, and Jerusalem fell apart. There was even to the point of cannibalism going on in the city. Okay? What greater atrocity is there? So it probably began then, but I would tend to agree that I think it is inclusive of the persecution of the Christians that we see happening. And believe me, there were atrocities going on. Babies being cut out of their mother's womb. Children being killed because the parents would not denounce God or renounce Christ. Christians being thrown into the arena and dying at the hands of wild animals or gladiators. Or my really unfavorite, being rolled in tar, stuck on a pole, and used as a lamppost for the Appian Way. James? No, I agree.
Because when we go to Acts chapter 21, and when Paul was brought in Jerusalem, he had been seized from the temple, he said to the commander, he says, may I say something to you? And the commander then turned to him and says, do you know Greek? And then he says, then you are not these Egyptians who some time ago stirred up a revolt and led the 4,000 men of the assassins out of the wilderness. What we know here is this person was somebody who was trying to say he was the Messiah. And so, because this individual didn't know Greek, the one they were looking for, but Paul did, he could ascertain that this is not the guy that they're looking for.
Right.
So there were these things happening at this point in time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still happening today is the unfortunate part.
But then that's part of the problem is people will take that scripture and say, oh, it applies to today's vernacular as opposed to what's going on.
Yeah. Remember the prophecy that we talked about, Christ says in verse 15, this is what Daniel talked about. Well, technically it's not. Daniel was talking about Antiochus Epiphanes. That was the specific future of his prophecy. But in his prophecy, we can see this happening. Okay? So, we look at this and we read about this and we say, oh, because that just happened yesterday, that's what this has to be talking. No, it doesn't. This, it could very well be part of this, but this had application and fulfillment back then. And what we see now is we see man just hasn't gotten any smarter, has he? Sabrina?
And there's a line that goes, there's nothing new under the sun.
That's the key. Yeah. So it happens all the time. Okay. That's verse 23. Here's the Christ. There he is. Don't believe them. Verse 24, continuing. False Christs and false prophets will arise. And they'll show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. We got 3 minutes. We'll start our discussion here, but I'm pretty confident we'll pick it up again beginning in verse 24 next week. Back into it. Who are the elect? Who has? Who are they? Oh, okay. How so? Okay. Who were the elect people? Not in this context. It's not the Jew. Anybody who obeys and follows after Christ. Those have been elected by God, known as absolutely right. They have been elected by God through his calling. So when he says all these Christs are going to arise, their purpose is to mislead even the elect. Does that not imply that there's another group of people that he's talking about that are going to be misled? That would be like saying, go eat your fruit. Here's an apple. Even an orange. We get the difference. And that's the language being used, Sabrina.
So people who had a mindset like Judas, did he think he was doing the right thing?
He thought he was, but was he?
No, he was absolutely.
He was absolutely wrong. So the elect are those that are doing what God, what Christ wanted them to do. Here's a couple of questions for you as you study this, which I know you are all going to do for next week, verse 24. Is this a time frame after Christ has died and the church has been established? Is that the elect that are under discussion, what we talk about as Christians today? Or Is there an understanding of this terminology, the elect, that could have occurred, did occur, before Christ's crucifixion? So there's our question for next week. Y'all can take a look at it. Thank you. Good discussion today. Thought it went rather well. We'll pick up in verse 24 next week.